You two ladies in here, where we can keep an eye on you. Something's going to happen, he said. I don't like it.
I just hope she didn't go and make anything mad with her planchette, Theodora said.
Sorry, Dr. Montague, I don't intend to speak rudely of your wife.
The doctor laughed, but stayed with his eye to the door.
She originally planned to come for our entire stay, he said, but she had enrolled in the course in yoga and could not miss her meetings. She's an excellent woman in most respects, he added, looking earnestly around at them. She is a good wife, and takes very good care of me. She does things splendidly, really. Buttons on my shirts? He smiled, hopefully. This, and he gestured in the direction of the hall, this is practically her only vice.
Perhaps she feels she is helping you with your work, Eleanor said.
The doctor grimaced and shivered. At that moment, the door swung wide and then crashed shut, and in the silence outside, they could hear slow rushing movements, as though a very steady, very strong wind were blowing the length of the hall. Glancing at one another, they tried to smile, tried to look courageous under the slow coming of the unreal cold, and then, through the noise of wind, the knocking on the doors downstairs. Without a word, Theodora took up the quilt from the foot of the doctor's bed and folded it around Eleanor and herself, and they moved close together, slowly, in order not to make a sound. Eleanor, clinging to Theodora, deadly cold in spite of Theodora's arms around her, thought, "It knows my name. It knows my name this time." The pounding came up the stairs, crashing on each step. The doctor was tense, standing by the door, and Luke moved over to stand beside him.
It's nowhere near the nursery, he said to the doctor, and put his hand out to stop the doctor from opening the door.
How weary one gets of this constant pounding, Theodora said ridiculously. Next summer I must really go somewhere else.
There are disadvantages everywhere, Luke told her. In the lake regions you get mosquitoes.
Could we have exhausted the repertoire of Hill House? Theodora asked, her voice shaking in spite of her light tone. Seems like we've had this pounding act before.
Is it going to start everything all over again?
The crashing echoed along the hall, seeming to come from the far end, the farthest from the nursery, and the doctor, tense against the door, shook his head anxiously.
I'm going to have to go out there, he said. She might be frightened, he told them.
Eleanor, rocking to the pounding which seemed inside her head as much as in the hall, holding tight to Theodora, said,
They know where we are.
And the others, assuming that she meant Arthur and Mrs. Montague, nodded and listened. The knocking, Eleanor told herself, pressing her hands to her eyes and swaying with the noise, will go on down the hall. It will go on and on to the end of the hall and turn and come back again. It will just go on and on the way it did before, and then it will stop, and we will look at each other and laugh and try to remember how cold we were, and the little swimming curls of fear on our backs. After a while it will stop. It never hurt us, Theodora was telling the doctor across the noise of the pounding. It won't hurt them.
I only hope she doesn't try to do anything about it, the doctor said grimly.
He was still at the door, but seemingly unable to open it against the volume of noise outside. I feel positively like an old hand at this, Theodora said to Eleanor. Come close and I'll keep warm. And she pulled Eleanor even nearer to her under the blanket, and the sickening, still cold surrounded them. Then there came suddenly quiet, and the secret, creeping silence they all remembered. Holding their breaths, they looked at one another. The doctor held the doorknob with both hands, and Luke, although his face was white and his voice trembled, said lightly,
Brandy, anyone? My passion for spirits?
No, Theodora giggled wildly. Not that pun, she said.
Sorry. You won't believe me, Luke said, the brandy decanter rattling against the glass as he tried to pour.
But I no longer think of it as a pun. That is what living in a haunted house does for a sense of humor.
Using both hands to carry the glass, he came to the bed where Theodora and Eleanor huddled under the blanket, and Theodora brought out one hand and took the glass.
Here, she said, holding it to Eleanor's mouth. Drink. Sipping. Not warmed, Eleanor thought. We are in the eye of the storm. There is not much more time.
She watched Luke carefully carry a glass of brandy over to the doctor and hold it out, and then without comprehending, watched the glass slip through Luke's fingers to the floor as the door was shaken violently and silently.
Luke pulled the doctor back, and the door was attacked without sound, seeming almost to be pulling away from its hinges, almost ready to buckle and go down, leaving them exposed.
Backing away, Luke and the doctor waited, tense and helpless.
It can't get in, Theodora was whispering over and over, her eyes on the door. It can't get in. Don't let it get in. It can't get in.
The shaking stopped. The door was quiet, and a little caressing touch began on the doorknob, feeling intimately and softly, and then, because the door was locked, patting and fondling the doorframe as though wheedling to be let in.
It knows we're here, Eleanor whispered,
and Luke, looking back at her over his shoulder, gestured furiously for her to be quiet.
It is so cold, Eleanor thought childishly. I will never be able to sleep again with all this noise coming from inside my head. How can these others hear the noise when it is coming from inside my head? I am disappearing, inch by inch, into this house. I am going apart a little bit at a time because all this noise is breaking me. Why are the others frightened?
She was aware, dully, that the pounding had begun again, the metallic, overwhelming sound of it washed over her like waves. She put her cold hands to her mouth to feel if her face was still there.
I have had enough, she thought. I am too cold.
At the nursery door, Luke said tensely, speaking clearly through the noise. At the nursery door.
Don't!
And he put out a hand to stop the doctor.
Purest love, Theodora said madly. Purest love!
And she began to giggle again. If they don't open the doors, Luke said to the doctor. The doctor stood now with his head against the door, listening, with Luke holding his arm to keep him from moving.
Now we are going to have a new noise, Eleanor thought, listening to the inside of her head. It is changing.
The pounding had stopped, as though it had proved ineffectual, and there was now a swift movement up and down the hall, as of an animal pacing back and forth with unbelievable impatience, watching first one door and then another, alert for a movement inside. And there was again the little babbling murmur which Eleanor remembered.
Am I doing it? She wondered quickly. Is that me?
And heard the tiny laughter beyond the door, mocking her.
Fee-fi-fo-fum, Theodora said under her breath, and the laughter swelled and became a shouting. It's inside my head, Eleanor thought, putting her hands over her face. It's inside my head, and it's getting out, getting out, getting out.
Now the house shivered and shook, the curtains dashing against the windows, the furniture swaying, and the noise in the hall became so great that it pushed against the walls. They could hear breaking glass as the pictures in the hall came down, and perhaps the smashing of windows. Luke and the doctor strained against the door, as though desperately holding it shut, and the floor moved under their feet.
We're going. We're going, Eleanor thought, and heard Theodora say, far away, The house is coming down.
She sounded calm and beyond fear. Holding to the bed, buffeted and shaken, Eleanor put her head down and closed her eyes and bit her lips against the cold and felt the sickening drop as the room fell away beneath her and then right itself and then turned, slowly swinging.
God almighty, Theodora said.
And a mile away at the door, Luke caught the doctor and held him upright.
Are you all right? Luke called, back braced against the door, holding the doctor by the shoulders. Theo, are you all right? Hanging on, Theodora said. I don't know about Nell. Keep her warm, Luke said, far away. We haven't seen it all yet.
His voice trailed away. Eleanor could hear and see him far away in the distant room, where he and Theodora and the doctor still waited. In the churning darkness where she fell endlessly, nothing was real except her own hands white around the bedpost.
She could see them, very small, and see them tighten when the bed rocked and the wall leaned forward and the door turned sideways far away. Somewhere, there was a great shaking crash as some huge thing came headlong.
It must be the tower, Eleanor thought, and I supposed it would stand for years. We are lost, lost. The house is destroying itself.
She heard the laughter, overall, coming thin and lunatic, rising in its little crazy tune, and thought,
No, it is over for me. It is too much, she thought. I will relinquish my possession of this self of mine, abdicate, give over willingly what I never wanted at all. Whatever it wants of me, it can have.
I'll come, she said aloud, and was speaking up to Theodora, who leaned over her.
The room was perfectly quiet, and between the still curtains at the window, she could see the sunlight. Luke sat in a chair by the window. His face was bruised, and his shirt was torn, and he was still drinking brandy. The doctor sat back in another chair, his hair freshly combed, looking neat and dapper and self-possessed. Theodora, leaning over Eleanor, said,
She's all right, I think.
And Eleanor sat up and shook her head, staring. Composed and quiet, the house lifted itself primly around her, and nothing had been moved.
How? Eleanor said,
and all three of them laughed. Another day, the doctor said, and in spite of his appearance, his voice was wan. Another night, he said. As I tried to say earlier, Luke remarked, living in a haunted house plays hell with a sense of humor. I really did not intend to make a forbidden pun, he told Theodora.
How are they?
Eleanor asked, the words sounding unfamiliar and her mouth stiff.
Both sleeping like babies, the doctor said. Actually, he said, as though continuing a conversation begun while Eleanor slept, I cannot believe that my wife stirred up that storm, but I do admit that one more word about pure love.
What happened? Eleanor asked. I must have been gritting my teeth all night, she thought, the way my mouth feels.
Hillhouse went dancing, Theodora said, taking us along on a mad midnight fling. At least I think it was dancing. It might have been turning somersaults. It's almost nine, the doctor said. When Eleanor is ready.
Come along, baby, Theodora said. Thea will wash your face for you and make you all neat for breakfast. Chapter 8 Did anyone tell them that Mrs. Dudley clears at 10? Theodora looked into the coffee pot speculatively. The doctor hesitated.
I hate to wake them after such a night.
But Mrs. Dudley clears at 10. They're coming, Eleanor said. I can hear them on the stairs. I can hear everything, all over the house, she wanted to tell them.
Then, distantly, they could all hear Mrs. Montague's voice, raised in irritation, and Luke, realizing, said,
Oh, Lord, they can't find the dining room, and hurried out to open doors.
Properly aired, Mrs. Montague's voice preceded her, and she swept into the dining room, tapped the doctor curtly on the shoulder by way of greeting, and seated herself with a general nod to the others.
I must say, she began at once, that I think you might have called us for breakfast. I suppose everything is cold? Is the coffee bearable?
Good morning, Arthur said sulkily, and sat down himself with an air of sullen ill-temper. Theodora almost upset the coffee pot in her haste to set up a cup of coffee before Mrs. Montague.
It seems hot enough, Mrs. Montague said. I shall speak to your Mrs. Dudley this morning in any case. That room must be aired.
And your night? The doctor asked timidly. Did you spend a profitable night?
If by profitable you mean comfortable, John, I wish you would say so. No, in answer to your most civil inquiry, I did not spend a comfortable night. I did not sleep a wink. That room is unendurable.
Noisy old house, isn't it? Arthur said. Branch kept tapping against my window all night, nearly drove me crazy, tapping and tapping.
Even with the windows open, that room is stuffy.
Mrs. Dudley's coffee is not as poor as her housekeeping. Another cup, if you please. I am astonished, John, that you put me in a room not properly aired. If there is to be any communication with those beyond, the air circulation at least ought to be adequate. I smelled dust all night.
Can't understand you, Arthur said to the doctor, letting yourself get all nervy about this place. Sat there all night long with my revolver and not a mouse stirred, except for that infernal branch tapping on the window. Nearly drove me crazy, he confided to Theodora.
We will not give up hope, of course, Mrs. Montague scowled at her husband. Perhaps tonight there may be some manifestations.
2.
Theo,
Eleanor put down her notepad, and Theodora, scribbling busily, looked up with a frown.
I've been thinking about something. I hate writing these notes. I feel like a damn fool trying to write this crazy stuff. I've been wondering.
Well, Theodora smiled a little.
You look so serious, she said. Are you coming to some great decision?
Yes, Eleanor said, deciding. About what I'm going to do afterwards. After we all leave Hill House.
Well?
I'm coming with you, Eleanor said.
Coming where with me?
Back with you, back home.
And Eleanor smiled wryly.
I'm going to follow you home.
Theodora stared.
Why?
She asked blankly.
I never had anyone to care about,
Eleanor said, wondering where she had heard someone say something like this before.
I want to be someplace where I belong.
I am not in the habit of taking home stray cats, Theodora said lightly.
Eleanor laughed, too.
I am a kind of stray cat, aren't I?
Well, Theodora took up her pencil again. You have your own home, she said. You'll be glad enough to get back to it when the time comes, Nell, my Nellie. I suppose we'll all be glad to get back home. What are you saying about those noises last night? I can't describe them.
I'll come, you know, Eleanor said. I'll just come.
Nellie, Nellie, Theodora laughed again. Look, she said, this is just a summer, just a few weeks' visit to a lovely old summer resort in the country. You have your life back home. I have my life. When the summer is over, we go back. We'll write each other, of course, and maybe visit. But Hill House is not forever, you know.
I can get a job. I won't be in your way. I don't understand.
Theodora threw down her pencil in exasperation.
Do you always go where you're not wanted?
Eleanor smiled placidly.
I've never been wanted anywhere, she said.
3.
It's all so motherly, Luke said. Everything's so soft. Everything's so padded. Great embracing chairs and sofas, which turn out to be hard and unwelcome when you sit down, and reject you at once.
Theo,
Eleanor said softly, and Theodora looked at her and shook her head in bewilderment.
And hands everywhere, little soft glass hands curving out to you, beckoning.
Theo?
Eleanor said.
No, Theodora said, I won't have you and I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Perhaps, Luke said, watching them, the single most repulsive aspect is the emphasis upon the globe. I ask you to regard impartially the lampshade made of tiny pieces of broken glass glued together, or the great round balls of the lights upon the stairs, or the fluted iridescent candy jar at Theo's elbow. In the dining room, there's a bowl of particularly filthy yellow glass resting upon the cupped hands of a child, and an Easter egg of sugar with a vision of shepherds dancing inside. A bosomy lady supports the stair rail on her head, and under glass in the drawing room,
Nellie, leave me alone. Let's walk down to the brook or something.
A child's face, done in cross-stitch.
Nell, don't look so apprehensive. Theo has only suggested that you walk down to the brook. If you like, I will go along.
Anything, Theodora said.
To frighten away rabbits. If you like, I will carry a stick. If you like, I will not come at all. Theo has only to say the word. Theodora laughed.
Perhaps Nell would rather stay here and write on walls.
So unkind, Luke said. Callous of you, Theo.
I want to hear more about the shepherds dancing in the Easter egg, Theodora said.
A world contained in sugar. 6 very tiny shepherds dancing and a shepherdess in pink and blue reclining upon a mossy bank enjoying them. There are flowers and trees and sheep and an old goat herd playing pipes. I would like to have been a goat herd, I think.
If you were not a bullfighter, Theodora said.
If I were not a bullfighter. Nell's affairs are the talk of the cafes, you will recall.
Pan, Theodora said. You should live in a hollow tree, Luke.
Nell, Luke said. You are not listening.
I think you frighten her, Luke.
Because Hill House will be mine someday with its untold treasures and its cushions? I am not gentle with a house, Nell. I might take a fit of restlessness and smash the sugar Easter egg, or shatter the little child hands, or go stomping and shouting up and down the stairs, striking at glued glass lamps with a cane, and slashing at the bosomy lady with the staircase on her head. I might.
You see, you do frighten her.
I believe I do, Luke said. Nell, I'm only talking nonsense.
I don't think he even owns a cane, Theodora said.
As a matter of fact, I do. Nell, I am only talking nonsense. What is she thinking about, Theo?
Theodora said carefully.
She wants me to take her home with me after we leave Hill House, and I won't do it.
Luke laughed. Poor silly Nell, he said. Journeys end in lovers' meeting. Let's go down to the brook. A mother house, Luke said, as they came down the steps from the veranda to the lawn. A house mother, a headmistress, a house mistress. I am sure I will be a very poor house master, like our Arthur, when Hill House belongs to me. I can't understand anyone wanting to own Hill House, Theodora said, and Luke turned and looked back with amusement at the house. You never know what you are going to want until you see it clearly, he said. If I never had a chance of owning it, I might feel very differently. What do people really want with each other, as Nell asked me once? What use are other people?
It was my fault my mother died, Eleanor said. She knocked on the wall and called me, and I never woke up. I ought to have brought her the medicine. I always did before, but this time she called me and I never woke up.
You should have forgotten all that by now, Theodora said.
I've wondered ever since if I did wake up. If I did wake up and hear her, and if I just went back to sleep. It would have been easy, and I've wondered about it.
Turn here, Luke said, if we're going to the brook.
You worry too much, Nell. You probably just like thinking it was your fault.
It was going to happen sooner or later in any case, Eleanor said. But of course, no matter when it happened, it was going to be my fault.
If it hadn't happened, you would never have come to Hill House.
We go single file along here, Luke said. Nell, go first.
Smiling, Eleanor went on ahead, kicking her feet comfortably along the path. Now I know where I am going, she thought. I told her about my mother, so that's all right. I will find a little house, or maybe an apartment like hers. I will see her every day, and we will go searching together for lovely things. Gold-trimmed dishes, and a white cat, and a sugar Easter egg, and a cup of stars. I will not be frightened or alone anymore. I will call myself just Eleanor.
Are you two talking about me?
She asked over her shoulder.
After a minute, Luke answered politely. A struggle between good and evil for the soul of Nell. I suppose I will have to be God, however.
But of course, she cannot trust either of us, Theodora said, amused.
Not me, certainly, Luke said.
Besides, Nell, Theodora said, we were not talking about you at all, as though I were the game's mistress, she said, half angry, to Luke.
I have waited such a long time, Eleanor was thinking. I have finally earned my happiness.
She came, leading them to the top of the hill, and looked down to the slim line of trees they must pass through to get to the brook.
They are lovely against the sky, she thought, so straight and free.
Luke was wrong about the softness everywhere, because the trees are hard, like wooden trees.
They're still talking about me, talking about how I came to Hill House and found Theodora, and now I will not let her go.
Behind her, she could hear the murmur of their voices, edged sometimes with malice, sometimes rising in mockery, sometimes touched with a laughter almost of kinship, and she walked on dreamily, hearing them come behind. She could tell when they entered the tall grass a minute after she did, because the grass moved hissingly beneath their feet, and a startled grasshopper leapt wildly away.
I could help her in her shop, Eleanor thought. She loves beautiful things, and I would go with her to find them. We could go anywhere we pleased, to the edge of the world if we liked, and come back when we wanted to. He is telling her now what he knows about me, that I am not easily taken in, that I had an oleander wall around me, and she is laughing because I am not going to be lonely anymore. They are very much alike, and they are very kind. I would not really have expected as much from them as they are giving me. I was very right to come because journeys end in lovers' meeting.
She came under the hard branches of the trees, and the shadows were pleasantly cool after the hot sun on the path. Now she had to walk more carefully because the path led downhill, and there were sometimes rocks and roots across her way. Behind her, their voices went on, quick and sharp, and then more slowly, and laughing.
I will not look back, she thought happily, because then they would know what I am thinking. We will talk about it together someday, Theo and I, when we have plenty of time. How strange I feel, she thought,
coming out of the trees onto the last steep part of the path, going down to the brook.
I am caught in a kind of wonder. I am still with joy. I will not look around until I am next to the brook, where she almost fell the day we came. I will remind her about the golden fish in the brook and about our picnic.
She sat down on the narrow green bank and put her chin on her knees.
I will not forget this one moment in my life, she promised herself,
listening to their voices and their footsteps coming slowly down the hill.
Hurry up, she said, turning her head to look for Theodora.
And was silent. There was no one on the hill. Nothing but the footsteps coming clearly along the path, and the faint, mocking laughter.
Who?
She whispered.
Who?
She could see the grass go down under the weight of the footsteps. She saw another grasshopper leap wildly away, and a pebble jar and roll. She heard clearly the brush of footsteps on the path, and then, standing back hard against the bank, heard the laughter very close.
Eleanor! Eleanor!
And she heard it inside and outside her head. This was a call she had been listening for all her life. The footsteps stopped, and she was caught in a movement of air so solid that she staggered and was held.
Eleanor, Eleanor,
she heard through the rushing of air past her ears.
Eleanor, Eleanor.
And she was held tight and safe.
It is not at all cold, she thought. It is not cold at all.
She closed her eyes and leaned back against the bank and thought,
don't let me go. And then, stay, stay,
as the firmness which held her slipped away, leaving her and fading.
Eleanor, Eleanor,
she heard once more. And then she stood beside the brook, shivering as though the sun had gone,
watching without surprise the vacant footsteps move across the water of the brook, sending small ripples going, and then over onto the grass on the other side, moving slowly and caressingly up and over the hill.
"Come back," she almost said, standing shaking by the brook. And then she turned and ran madly up the hill, crying as she ran and calling, "Theo! Luke!"
She found them in a little group of trees, leaning against a tree trunk and talking softly and laughing. When she ran to them, they turned, startled, and Theodora was almost angry.
"What on earth do you want this time?" she said. "I waited for you by the brook."
"We decided to stay here where it was cool," Theodora said. "We thought you heard us calling you, didn't we, Luke?"
"Oh, yes," said Luke, embarrassed. "We were sure you heard us calling."
"Anyway," Theodora said, "we were going to come along in a minute. Weren't we, Luke?"
"Yes," said Luke, grinning. "Oh, yes."
4. "Subterranean waters," the doctor said, waving his fork.
"Nonsense. Does Mrs. Dudley do all your cooking? The asparagus is more than passable. Arthur, let that young man help you to asparagus."
"My dear," the doctor looked fondly upon his wife, "it has become our custom to rest for an hour or so after lunch. If you..."
"Certainly not. I have far too much to do while I'm here. I must speak to your cook. I must see that my room is aired. I must ready planchette for another session this evening. Arthur must clean his revolver."
"Mark of a fighting man," Arthur conceded. "Firearms always in good order."
"You and these young people may rest, of course. Perhaps you do not feel the urgency which I do, the terrible compulsion to aid whatever poor souls wander restlessly here. Perhaps you find me foolish in my sympathy for them. Perhaps I am even ludicrous in your eyes because I can spare a tear for a lost, abandoned soul, left without any helping hand. Pure love."
"Croquet," Luke said hastily. "Croquet, perhaps?" He looked eagerly from one to another. "Badminton," he suggested. "Croquet?"
"Subterranean waters," Theodora added helpfully.
"No fancy sauces for me," Arthur said firmly. "Tell my fellows it's the mark of a cad."
He looked thoughtfully at Luke.
"Mark of a cad. Fancy sauces. Women waiting on you. My fellows wait on themselves. Mark of a man," he said to Theodora.
"And what else do you teach them?" Theodora asked politely.
"Teach? You mean, do they learn anything, my fellows? You mean algebra, like Latin?" "Certainly." Arthur sat back, pleased. "Leave all that kind of thing to the teachers," he explained.
"And how many fellows are there in your school?" Theodora leaned forward, courteous, interested, making conversation with a guest, and Arthur basked. At the head of the table, Mrs. Montague frowned and tapped her fingers impatiently.
"How many? How many? Got a crack tennis team, you know."
He beamed on Theodora.
"Crack. Absolutely top hole. Not counting milksops."
"Not counting," said Theodora, "milksops."
"Oh, tennis, golf, baseball, track, cricket." He smiled slyly. "Didn't guess we played cricket, did you? Then there's swimming and volleyball. Some fellows go out for everything, though," he told her anxiously. "All-around types. Maybe 70 altogether?"
"Arthur," Mrs. Montague could contain herself no longer. "No shop talk now. You're on vacation, remember?"
"Yes. Silly of me," Arthur smiled fondly. "Got to check the weapons," he explained.
"It's 2 o'clock, Mrs. Dudley said in the doorway. "I clear off at 2.
5. Theodora laughed, and Eleanor, hidden deep in the shadows behind the summer house, put her hands over her mouth to keep from speaking, to let them know she was there.
"I've got to find out," she was thinking. "I've got to find out."
"It's called the Grattan Murders," Luke was saying. "Lovely thing. I can even sing it if you prefer."
"Mark of a cad,"
Theodora laughed again. Poor Luke. I would have said scoundrel.
If you would rather be spending this brief hour with Arthur.
Of course I would rather be with Arthur. An educated man is always an enlivening companion.
Cricket, Luke said. Never would have thought we played cricket, would you?
Sing, sing, Theodora said, laughing.
Luke sang in a nasal monotone, emphasizing each word distinctly.
The first was young Miss Grattan. She tried not to let him in. He stabbed her with a corn knife. That's how his crimes begin. The next was Grandma Grattan, so old and tired and gray. She fit off her attacker until her strength give way. The next was Grandpa Grattan, a-settin' by the fire. He crept up close behind him and strangled him with a wire. The last was Baby Grattan, all in his trundle bed. He stove him in the short ribs until that child was dead and spit tobacco juice all on his golden head.
When he finished, there was a moment's silence, and then Theodora said weakly,
"It's lovely, Luke. Perfectly beautiful. I will never hear it again without thinking of you."
"I plan to sing it to Arthur," Luke said.
"When are they going to talk about me?" Eleanor wondered in the shadows.
After a minute, Luke went on idly.
"I wonder what the doctor's book will be like when he writes it. Do you suppose he'll put us in?
You will probably turn up as an earnest young psychic researcher, and I will be a lady of undeniable gifts but dubious reputation.
I wonder if Mrs. Montague will have a chapter to herself.
And Arthur and Mrs. Dudley. I hope he doesn't reduce us all to figures on a graph."
I wonder, said Luke. "It's warm this afternoon," he said. "What could we do that is cool?"
"We could ask Mrs. Dudley to make lemonade."
"You know what I want to do," Luke said. "I want to explore. Let's follow the brook up into the hills and see where it comes from. Maybe there's a pond somewhere and we can go swimming."
"Or a waterfall.
It looks like a brook that runs naturally from a waterfall.
Come on, then."
Listening behind the summer house, Eleanor heard their laughter and the sound of their feet running down the path to the house.
6. "Here's an interesting thing here," Arthur's voice said, in the manner of one endeavoring valiantly to entertain. "Here in this book, says how to make candles out of ordinary children's crayons."
"Interesting," the doctor sounded weary. "If you will excuse me, Arthur, I have all these notes to write up."
"Sure, doctor. All got our work to do, not a sound."
Eleanor, listening outside the parlor door, heard the small, irritating noises of Arthur settling down to be quiet.
"Not much to do around here, is there?" Arthur said. "How do you pass the time, generally?"
"Working," the doctor said shortly.
"You writing down what happens in the house?"
"Yes."
"You got me in there?"
"No."
"Seems like you ought to put in our notes from planchette. What are you writing now?"
"Arthur, can you read or something?"
"Sure, never meant to make a nuisance of myself."
Eleanor heard Arthur take up a book and put it down and light a cigarette and sigh and stir and finally say,
"Listen, isn't there anything to do around here? Where is everybody?"
The doctor spoke patiently, but without interest.
"Theodora and Luke have gone to explore the brook, I think, and I suppose the others are around somewhere. As a matter of fact, I believe my wife was looking for Mrs. Dudley."
"Oh,"
Arthur sighed again.
"Might as well read, I guess," he said,
and then, after a minute,
"Say, doctor, I don't like to bother you, but listen to what it says here in this book."
7.
"No," Mrs. Montague said. "I do not believe in throwing young people together promiscuously, Mrs. Dudley. If my husband had consulted me before arranging this fantastic house party..."
"Well, now,"
It was Mrs. Dudley's voice, and Eleanor, pressed against the dining room door, stared and opened her mouth wide against the wooden panels of the door.
"I always say, Mrs. Montague, that you're only young once. Those young people are enjoying themselves, and it's only natural for the young."
"But living under one roof..."
"It's not as though they weren't grown up enough to know right from wrong. That pretty Theodora lady is old enough to take care of herself, I'd think, no matter how gay Mr. Luke."
"I need a dry dish towel, Mrs. Dudley, for the silverware. It's a shame, I think, the way children grow up these days, knowing everything. There should be more mysteries for them, more things that belong rightly to grown-ups, that they have to wait to find out."
"Then they find them out the hard way."
Mrs. Dudley's voice was comfortable and easy. "Dudley brought in these tomatoes from the garden this morning," she said.
"They did well this year."
"Shall I start on them?"
"No, oh no. You sit down over there and rest. You've done enough. I'll put on the water and we'll have a nice cup of tea."
8.
"Journey's end in lover's meeting," Luke said, and smiled across the room at Eleanor. "Does that blue dress on Theo really belong to you? I've never seen it before."
"I am Eleanor," Theodora said wickedly, "because I have a beard."
"You were wise to bring clothes for two," Luke told Eleanor. "Theo would never have looked half so well in my old blazer."
"I am Eleanor," Theo said, "because I am wearing blue. I love my love with an E because she is ethereal. Her name is Eleanor, and she lives in expectation."
"She's being spiteful," Eleanor thought remotely, from a great distance, it seemed. She could watch these people and listen to them. Now she thought, "Theo is being spiteful, and Luke is trying to be nice. Luke is ashamed of himself for laughing at me, and he is ashamed of Theo for being spiteful."
"Luke," Theodora said, with half a glance at Eleanor, "come and sing to me again."
"Later," Luke said uncomfortably. "The doctor has just set up the chessmen."
He turned away in some haste. Theodora, piqued, leaned her head against the back of her chair and closed her eyes, clearly determined not to speak. Eleanor sat, looking down at her hands, and listened to the sounds of the house. Somewhere upstairs a door swung quietly shut. A bird touched the tower briefly and flew off. In the kitchen the stove was settling and cooling, with little soft creakings. An animal, a rabbit, moved through the bushes by the summer house. She could even hear, with her new awareness of the house, the dust drifting gently in the attics, the wood aging. Only the library was closed to her. She could not hear the heavy breathing of Mrs. Montague and Arthur over their planchette, nor their little excited questions. She could not hear the books rotting or rust seeping into the circular iron stairway to the tower. In the little parlor, she could hear, without raising her eyes, Theodora's small, irritated tappings and the quiet sound of the chessmen being set down. She heard when the library door slammed open, and then the sharp, angry sound of footsteps coming to the little parlor, and then all of them turned as Mrs. Montague opened the door and marched in.
"I must say," said Mrs. Montague on a sharp, explosive breath, "I really must say that this is the most infuriating—"
"My dear," the doctor rose, but Mrs. Montague waved him aside angrily.
"If you had the decency," she said.
Arthur, coming behind her sheepishly, moved past her and, almost slinking, settled in a chair by the fire. He shook his head warily when Theodora turned to him.
"The common decency. After all, John, I did come all this way, and so did Arthur, just to help out. And I certainly must say that I never expected to meet with such cynicism and incredulity from you, of all people. And these," she gestured at Eleanor and Theodora and Luke, all I ask is some small minimum of trust, just a little bit of sympathy for all I am trying to do, and instead, you disbelieve, you scoff, you mock and jeer."
Breathing heavily, red-faced,
She shook her finger at the doctor.
Planchette, she said bitterly, will not speak to me tonight. Not one single word have I had from Planchette as a direct result of your sneering and your skepticism.
Planchette may very possibly not speak to me for a matter of weeks. It has happened before, I can tell you. It has happened before, when I subjected it to the taunts of unbelievers. I have known Planchette to be silent for weeks, and the very least I could have expected coming here, as I did with none but the finest motives, was a little respect.
She shook her finger at the doctor, wordless for the moment.
My dear, the doctor said, I am certain that none of us would knowingly have interfered.
Mocking and jeering, were you not? Skeptical with Planchette's very words before your eyes? Those young people pert and insolent?
Mrs. Montague, really, said Luke, but Mrs. Montague brushed past him and sat herself down, her lips tight and her eyes blazing.
The doctor sighed, started to speak, and then stopped. Turning away from his wife, he gestured Luke back to the chess table. Apprehensively, Luke followed, and Arthur, wriggling in his chair, said in a low voice to Theodora,
Never seen her so upset, you know. Miserable experience waiting for Planchette. So easily offended, of course. Sensitive to atmosphere.
Seeming to believe that he had satisfactorily explained the situation, he sat back and smiled timidly. Eleanor was hardly listening, wondering dimly at the movement in the room. Someone was walking around, she thought without interest. Luke was walking back and forth in the room, talking softly to himself. Surely an odd way to play chess. Humming? Singing? Once or twice she almost made out a broken word, and then Luke spoke quietly. He was at the chess table, where he belonged, and Eleanor turned and looked at the empty center of the room, where someone was walking and singing softly, and then she heard it clearly. Go walking through the valley. Go walking through the valley. Go walking through the valley, as we have done before.
Why, I know that, she thought, listening, smiling, to the faint melody. We used to play that game, I remember that.
It's simply that it's a most delicate and intricate piece of machinery, Mrs. Montague was saying to Theodora. She was still angry, but visibly softening under Theodora's sympathetic attention.
The slightest air of disbelief offends it, naturally. How would you feel if people refused to believe in you?
Go in and out the windows, go in and out the windows, go in and out the windows, as we have done before.
The voice was light, perhaps only a child's voice, singing sweetly and thinly on the barest breath. And Eleanor smiled and remembered, hearing the little song more clearly than Mrs. Montague's voice continuing about Planchette.
Go forth and face your lover. Go forth and face your lover. Go forth and face your lover as we have done before.
She heard the little melody fade and felt the slight movement of air as the footsteps came close to her. And something almost brushed her face. Perhaps there was a tiny sigh against her cheek. And she turned in surprise. Luke and the doctor bent over the chessboard. Arthur leaned confidingly close to Theodora, and Mrs. Montague talked.
None of them heard it, she thought, with joy. Nobody heard it but me.
Chapter 9 Eleanor closed the bedroom door softly behind her, not wanting to awaken Theodora, although the noise of a door closing would hardly disturb anyone, she thought, who slept so soundly as Theodora.
I learned to sleep very lightly, she told herself comfortingly, when I was listening for my mother.
The hall was dim, lighted only by the small nightlight over the stairs, and all the doors were closed. Funny, Eleanor thought, going soundlessly in her bare feet along the hall carpet.
It's the only house I ever knew, where you don't have to worry about making noise at night or at least about anyone knowing it's you.
She had awakened with the thought of going down to the library, and her mind had supplied her with a reason.
I cannot sleep, she explained to herself. And so I am going downstairs to get a book. If anyone asks me where I am going, it is down to the library to get a book because I cannot sleep.
It was warm. Drowsily, luxuriously warm. She went barefoot and in silence down the great staircase and to the library door before she thought,
But I can't go in there. I'm not allowed in there.
And recoiled in the doorway before the odor of decay, which nauseated her.
Mother, she said aloud, and stepped quickly back.
Come along, a voice answered distinctly upstairs, and Eleanor turned, eager, and hurried to the staircase.
Mother,
she said softly, and then again.
Mother!
A little soft laugh floated down to her, and she ran, breathless, up the stairs and stopped at the top, looking to right and left along the hallway at the closed doors.
You're here somewhere, she said.
And down the hall the little echo went, slipping in a whisper on the tiny currents of air.
Somewhere, it said, somewhere.
Laughing, Eleanor followed, running soundlessly down the hall to the nursery doorway. The cold spot was gone, and she laughed up at the two grinning faces looking down at her.
Are you in here?
She whispered outside the door.
Are you in here?
And knocked, pounding with her fists.
Yes,
it was Mrs. Montague inside, clearly just awakened.
Yes, come in, whatever you are.
No, no, Eleanor thought, hugging herself and laughing silently. Not in there, not with Mrs. Montague,
and slipped away down the hall, hearing Mrs. Montague behind her calling,
I am your friend. I intend you no harm. Come in and tell me what is troubling you.
She won't open her door, Eleanor thought wisely. She's not afraid, but she won't open her door, and knocked, pounding against Arthur's door, and heard Arthur's awakening gasp. Dancing, the carpet soft under her feet, she came to the door behind which Theodora slept.
Faithless Theo, she thought. Cruel, laughing Theo. Wake up! Wake up! Wake up!
And pounded and slapped the door, laughing, and shook the doorknob, and then ran swiftly down the hall to Luke's door and pounded.
Wake up, she thought. Wake up and be faithless. None of them will open their doors, she thought. They will sit inside, with the blankets pressed around them, shivering and wondering what is going to happen to them next. Wake up, she thought, pounding on the doctor's door. I dare you to open your door and come out to see me dancing in the hall of Hill House.
Then Theodora startled her by calling out wildly,
Nell? Nell? Doctor, Luke, Nell's not here.
Poor house, Eleanor thought. I had forgotten Eleanor. Now they will have to open their doors. And she ran quickly down the stairs, hearing behind her the doctor's voice raised anxiously, and Theodora calling,
Nell? Eleanor? What fools they are, she thought. Now I will have to go into the library. Mother? Mother?
She whispered.
Mother?
And stopped at the library door, sick. Behind her she could hear them talking upstairs in the hall. Funny, she thought. I can feel the whole house, and heard even Mrs. Montague protesting, and Arthur, and then the doctor, clearly.
We've got to look for her. Everyone, please, hurry.
Well, I can hurry, too, she thought, and ran down the corridor to the little parlor, where the fire flickered briefly at her when she opened the door. And the chessmen sat, where Luke and the doctor had left their game. The scarf Theodora had been wearing lay across the back of her chair.
I can take care of that, too, Eleanor thought, her maid's pathetic finery,
and put one end of it between her teeth and pulled, tearing, and then dropped it when she heard them behind her on the stairs. They were coming down all together, anxious, telling one another where to look first now and then, calling,
Eleanor? Nell? Coming? Coming?
She heard far away, somewhere else in the house, and she heard the stairs shake under their feet and a cricket stir on the lawn. Daring, gay, she ran down the corridor again to the hall and peeked out at them from the doorway. They were moving purposefully, all together, straining to stay near one another, and the doctor's flashlight swept the hall and stopped at the great front door, which was standing open wide. Then, in a rush, calling, "Eleanor! Eleanor!" they ran all together across the hall and out the front door, looking and calling, the flashlight moving busily. Eleanor clung to the door and laughed until tears came into her eyes. "What fools they are," she thought. "We trick them so easily. They are so slow and so deaf and so heavy. They trample over the house, poking and peering and rough." She ran across the hall and through the game room and into the dining room and from there into the kitchen with its doors. "It's good here," she thought. "I can go in any direction when I hear them." When they came back into the front hall, blundering and calling her, she darted quickly out onto the veranda into the cool night. She stood with her back against the door, the little mists of Hill House curling around her ankles, and looked up at the pressing heavy hills. Gathered comfortably into the hills, she thought, protected and warm. Hill House is lucky. "Eleanor?" They were very close, and she ran along the veranda and darted into the drawing room.
"Hugh Crane," she said, "will you come and dance with me?"
She curtsied to the huge leaning statue, and its eyes flickered and shone at her. Little reflected lights touched the figurines in the gilded chairs, and she danced gravely before Hugh Crane, who watched her, gleaming.
"Go in and out the windows," she sang, and felt her hands taken as she danced. "Go in and out the windows,"
and she danced out onto the veranda and around the house. "Going around and around and around the house," she thought, "and none of them can see me." She touched a kitchen door as she passed, and 6 miles away, Mrs. Dudley shuddered in her sleep. She came to the tower, held so tightly in the embrace of the house, in the straining grip of the house, and walked slowly past its gray stones, not allowed to touch even the outside. Then she turned and stood before the great doorway. The door was closed again, and she put out her hand and opened it effortlessly. "Thus I enter Hill House," she told herself, and stepped inside, as though it were her own.
"Here I am," she said aloud. "I've been all around the house, in and out the windows, and I danced."
"Eleanor?" It was Luke's voice, and she thought, "Of all of them, I would least like to have Luke catch me. Don't let him see me," she thought beggingly, and turned and ran, without stopping, into the library. "And here I am," she thought. "Here I am inside." It was not cold at all, but deliciously, fondly warm. It was light enough for her to see the iron stairway curving around and around up to the tower, and the little door at the top. Under her feet, the stone floor moved caressingly, rubbing itself against the soles of her feet, and all around the soft air touched her, stirring her hair, drifting against her fingers, coming in a light breath across her mouth, and she danced in circles. "No stone lions for me," she thought, "no oleanders. I have broken the spell of Hill House and somehow come inside. I am home," she thought, and stopped in wonder at the thought. "I am home. I am home," she thought. "Now to climb." Climbing the narrow iron stairway was intoxicating, going higher and higher, around and around, looking down, clinging to the slim iron railing, looking far, far down onto the stone floor. Climbing, looking down, she thought of the soft green grass outside, and the rolling hills and the rich trees. Looking up, she thought of the tower of Hill House rising triumphantly between the trees, tall over the road, which wound through Hillsdale, and past the white house set in flowers, and past the magic oleanders, and past the stone lions, and on far, far away
to a little lady who was going to pray for her. Time is ended now, she thought. All that is gone and left behind. And that poor little lady praying still for me.
Eleanor!
For a minute she could not remember who they were. Had they been guests of hers in the house of the Stone Lions? Dining at her long table in the candlelight? Had she met them at the inn over the tumbling stream?